Hello and welcome to Uncommon Law, my podcast about true stories from my life experience of over 50 years as a lawyer and trial judge. This is a look at the law from the inside out, stuff they don't teach in law school. This is Judge Rudy Greco, retired justice of the New York State Supreme Court. The right to bear arms, conferred on all Americans by the Second Amendment, is a hot button issue. It was guaranteed to raise strong feelings on every side of the equation. And these next three short stories, I think, will shed some light on the whole issue and perhaps put it in a different perspective. First one is about a friend of mine named Billy, who was a retired detective from the NYPD Auto Squad. Billy grew up in tough Williamsburg neighborhood of Brooklyn, surrounded by Jewish, Italian, and Puerto Rican kids, all of whom were tough. And Billy was a tough guy as well, but he was a sweetheart of a guy. And Williamsburg at that time, it now has been gentrified, at that time was industrial and was filled with docks and warehouses and factories and such. Billy retired as a detective from the NYPD and hired on as a man Friday to a hedge fund guy who was super wealthy, also a Brooklyn boy like Billy. And that guy lived in a 24-room Park Avenue condo. He hired Billy because Billy was a Brooklyn guy, because Billy was a retired policeman. He had a gun license and he could drive. And Billy was Man Friday driver and bodyguard to this gentleman. He was on call. The pay was excellent. It was big, big pay for that line of work. But Billy had to, the downside was Billy had to be on call for the most part. They got along famously because they were both Brooklyn guys, even though they ended up in different walks of life. They both grew up on the streets and could speak the same language. Billy took to hanging out at the Racing Club, which was on East 67th Street across from the Fox Television Studios, which was owned by his best friend, Shelley, the bail bondsman. And it was convenient because Billy's boss lived only two blocks away on Park Avenue. So he could hang out there and hang around and enjoy downtime and still be right nearby before and after he was on call. He liked the job, the pay was great, and he hung out at the Racing Club all the time because he didn't necessarily want to go home. He wasn't happy about going home. He had been out on the streets all his life, and he wasn't a homebody, and it wasn't necessary for him to be home. So late one night, Billy and a couple of other regulars, it was a quiet night, and it was late. It was after 12 o'clock. He was just hanging around, drinking and talking. And in comes three armed robbers, one of whom was bearing a shotgun. The other two had pistols. The shotgun guy went right to John the bartender, one of Billy's good friends, and put the gun to John's head and told everybody else at the bar, the other two or three patrons, lay down on the floor, put your hands by your side, and don't make a move. Billy did what he was told. The other two guys with the pistols moved on towards the back of the restaurant where there was a kitchen, men's room, and coat room. And then the last room in the place was a restaurant. And each of them proceeded. And one of them was in the kitchen and put a gun to the chef, a dishwasher, and a waiter. And the other guy went to the back room where there were a couple of customers dining late. And everybody was under the gun. The guy in the middle eventually went to the back to help out, and that gave the waiter an opportunity to sneak out the side door and run up the street to the 19th Precinct, which was just a half a block away, and summon some policemen. When it was all over, the gunmen left with cash and whatever else they could find, jewelry, and they were met by six armed uniformed policemen from the 19th Precinct at the front door, who surprised them. And they were arrested and captured. A few days later, I was talking to Billy. Actually, I was doing some depositions of everybody in the holdup because the owners were friends of mine, and we wanted to get everybody's testimony down pat and see what exactly had happened. And I asked Billy, I said, Bill, What happened? You had a gun. These guys came in with guns. What happened with you and your gun? You know, the gun's there to protect yourself and everything else. He says, yeah, the gun stayed exactly where it was, in my shoulder holster, under my jacket, where nobody could see it. This isn't Dodge City. These guys had shotguns and pistols trained on everybody else, and nobody was going to get shot up in, on my account. He said, it would be totally stupid. So thankfully, they didn't see the gun, and I just let it sit where it was. I'm not dumb, he said, and it would be foolish to take a gun out under in those circumstances. And that's the end of that story. The next one is about a friend of mine who was a fellow named Gabe, who was the retired head of the Queens District Attorney's Narcotics Bureau. And Gabe had been a top-notch prosecutor in narcotics cases for years and years and built a big reputation, and rightfully so. He did it right. He was a total professional and a very, very good assistant district attorney, a good prosecutor. And Gabe had retired, and because he had such a name, went into private practice with another criminal lawyer, and they did criminal defense work. And Gabe had been doing very, very well. He started to make quite a bit of good money on the criminal defense side. And in keeping with that, he had to go to an arraignment in Brooklyn one night at Skimmerhorn Street in downtown Brooklyn. And he went to the arraignment, represented his client, and it was a warm summer night. And around 9 or 9:30 in the evening, he got in his car, which was a brand-new Cadillac sedan, and headed towards Queens. And he was just passing the approach to the Brooklyn Bridge on Tillery Street, heading towards the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway to come back home, when on Tillery Street, his car was hit in the rear by another car. Well, Gabe pulled over, and the other car that hit him pulled over to the curb. Not too many people on the street out there. And the two guys in the car, the two occupants of the car, a couple of young guys, got out of the car and approached Gabe at the side and put a gun to his head. Here he was, a nice, prosperous, portly, white guy, looking middle-aged and happy in his brand-new Cadillac. And they said, give us your watch, your money, and anything in your jewelry, anything else you have. And Gabe turned it over. Now, Gabe, he carried a gun. He was licensed to carry a gun. And when he told me the story at lunch a couple of days after this happened, I said, Gabe, what about the gun? What did you do with the gun? He says, I left it just where it was. He said, thank God they didn't see it. They'd have killed me because I showed the gun. He says, are you kidding? They had the drop on me. I wasn't doing anything. I was just glad to survive. So much for the protection aspect of that gun. And the last story is about another retired detective, Victor Giuliano. Victor had been, he's like the walking embodiment of Lieutenant Columbo on the TV show. Victor looked like he was half asleep, but that was misleading. Victor was never half asleep. He was super wide awake all the time. He had a very successful career on the hotel squad of the as a New York detective. And the hotel squad was a choice detail. And Victor had a big, big reputation in all the hotels for catching culprits that habitually hang around hotels, pickpockets, and you name it, you know, thieves, burglars, what have you. And Victor had done a very, very good job. Victor had a nice reputation. I was in a bar with him downstairs opposite the criminal court where we used to hang out. They're called the Part One. And I remember a bad guy comes up to Victor and he said, I remember you. He said, I know you. You don't remember me. He said, you're Detective Giuliano and you arrested me. He says, I'm going to tell you, you got me clean. He said, you're a real good detective. He said, and you played clean. I really appreciated that and I respected that. He said, let me buy you a drink. And that's the kind of reputation Victor had. And that reputation went on when Victor became, after he retired, a private investigator. And he had very, very prominent clients. He did very, very well as a PI, working for criminal lawyers and their clients doing investigations. His most notable client was John Gotti, who was known as the Teflon Don. And one of the reasons he was so Teflon was Victor's very, very competent investigatory skills. Victor would come up with all sorts of things that were very helpful to John Gotti's defense. And John Gotti managed to frustrate the feds, and the feds didn't like Victor very much for his role in helping John Gotti, but he was doing a professional job. In any event, Victor's office was down the hall from my own office, and we had a garage in the basement of the building, and he went down to the garage to get his car one day, past the garage office on the first level, when a guy emerged with a gun and put it to Victor's head and told him lay down on the side on the floor and not make a sound. And there was somebody else there already. And then another person walked in who happened to be my former law partner, Joe. And when Joe walked past the office, this guy did the same thing. He put the gun to Joe's head and he says, "You lay down next to that guy, Victor, on the floor, and don't make a sound." And the guy emptied the cash register, this, that, and the other thing. And while the guy was emptying the cash register, Victor whispered to Joe, "Joe, please take my gun. If this guy finds out I was a cop, he'll kill me." And Joe said, "Victor, keep the goddamn gun. I don't want it. It wasn't my problem. You're a cop. That's your problem. You can have it." In any event, thankfully, the guy never went any further and didn't search anybody or discover Victor's gun. And the whole thing went by. And I think the three stories, you know, point up the simple fact that things are not always what they seem. And that argument about, by some of the gun zealots, about how important it is for guns to protect ourselves, for self-protection, just don't always hold water. And these three instances are pretty graphic indications of the fact that they don't always protect you. Sometimes the guns can be a terrible liability. Thanks for listening. Come back next week for another episode of Uncommon Law, Lessons They Don't Teach in Law School. I'm Judge Rudy Greco. Court is adjourned.